Hi, friend. It's Brittany Moses.
And Ranella Kalagithi.
And you're listening to Speaking Our Minds, the podcast that brings you honest and nuanced conversations around mental health, holistic wellness, and the real complexities of what it means to be human in the challenges of today's world, where we have fun, fascinating, and meaningful discussions around how to live a more insightful, connected, and whole life from the inside out. Joined by guest professionals, thought leaders, and some of my friends and those with lived experience. As always, we ask that you keep in mind that the views and opinions shared here are respectively held by each individual and is not a substitute for professional care or an alternative to seeking personal help from your clinician or provider and is ours to discern. We're so glad you're here. Follow the conversation on Instagram at SpeakingOurMindsPod and sit with us because we're diving in. This podcast episode is brought to you by WeShare by UHSM, a unique healthcare membership on a mission to create holistic wellness for the mind, body, and spirit. I'm honored to partner with UHSM and its community of faithful members. Together, we plan to create more awareness and programs around mental health and the role it plays in our overall balanced health. If you or someone you know is frustrated with their current healthcare, I encourage you to inquire about membership options at www.weshare.org or call 1-800-900-8476. Welcome back to another episode of the Speaking Our Minds podcast. This is Brittany.
And Ranella.
You're back.
And Caitlin.
That's okay. Just dive right in there. And thank you for joining us for another episode. Ranella, what are we talking about this month?
Oh, this month is a great month because we are talking about religious wounding, spiritual evolving. We're talking about deconstruction, faith, and all the things that come with that, and hopefully trying to help people understand their own experience a little bit more and make a little bit more room for maybe other people's experiences too.
Yeah. And really that growth process, right? Something that we've been talking about continuously throughout this month is that it's a very natural part of development for our cognitive thinking to expand, for our brains to grow, our frontal lobes to develop. And that can switch us from this black and white thinking, maybe from childhood, adolescence, up to, you know, some more complex thinking into young adulthood. And for some people that can maybe feel like it's at odds with faith, maybe a black and white view of that, and really realizing that it's normal to kind of refine your beliefs and your understandings as you go through life and have more experiences and learn more things. But also there are some, you know, trigger situations that can kind of push people into this quicker if they've gone through something like trauma or religious trauma or wounding. It can cause you to kind of start questioning things in your experiences versus what you were taught or what your idea of God has been versus what other people have displayed or represented God in a harmful way, right? And so we want to talk about that. And I have my good friend, Caitlin Harrison, on to join us. Caitlin, hi.
Hi again.
That's who you heard in the beginning.
Yes. That was me, impatient. No.
I love it. Caitlin, you know, I know you and I have had various conversations. You are a therapist. This is specifically an area of work that you specialize in. So could you tell us a little bit more about yourself and really what led you into the work of religious trauma?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. My name is Caitlin Harrison. I'm an associate marriage family therapist who's very close to licensure, but just got to take that test.
You're going to get it.
Those who know, know the journey.
Yeah.
And I work at Kaiman & Co. in Highland Park, California. And so, yeah, my journey with therapy, becoming a therapist, I was an undergrad at Seattle Pacific University, and I initially thought I was going to be a pastry chef, and then I thought I was going to go into acting, and then I was in a show, and one of my friends was talking about how her friend was becoming a sex therapist, and I was like, what is that? I've never heard of that. Did some digging, and I was like, this is what I want to do. So that was my, like, initial entryway into becoming a therapist, recognizing I need to get my master's, starting those conversations with family. I grew up in a conservative Christian home, and so it definitely, I was pleasantly surprised by how welcome my family was around, like, okay, cool, like, because
Yeah, that's big.
yeah,
That's
it
big.
is, it is. And it's, you know, I'm holding the both and is a big part of my experience, right?
Right.
And so I think there are parts of my story that are definitely negatively impacted by the view of sex in growing up in the church. And I've had to work towards a bigger, different definition for myself, but I also honor the and of, like, there was enough sex positivity that, like, this wasn't a you know, a career path that my family's like, well, we're gonna disown you. Anyway, so sex therapy was the entryway. And then as I was starting to work with folks, I was saying, you know, my interest was really integrating sexuality and spirituality. Unfortunately, from that, I kind of came to the def the understanding and the it's a newer term of religious trauma. And so, you know, it is a little bit more of a negative lens, I get, I suppose, in terms of integrating sexuality and spirituality. But religious trauma is certainly something that it has become something that's more well understood, and people are really gravitating towards being able to have a holistic understanding and healing from church hurt and what happened in religious institutions and systems and how that is impacting them currently. And so that has become the large part of my work. That's the majority of folks that I see are those that are impacted by religious trauma.
Wow, that's incredible. And I think that's so important because the nature of religion and its beliefs, you know, depending on what system you come from, is it kind of doesn't allow for people to validate what they might be experiencing because of the, this it's sometimes like the source of like feeling like they're religious implications, like God's not going to be happy with them. They maybe don't have a close relationship with God if they try to seek help or if they try to, So I think this, the fact that we're talking about this and that you've kind of dedicated your work to it, your life to this work is just so important, giving people a voice and helping them to see their experience as truly valid.
Yeah,
Thank you.
when I hear your story, the sex therapist to religious trauma pathway makes so much sense to me. There's definitely a lot of intersectionality there. Similarly for me, actually, I went through the mental health route and then kept running into, religious trauma as well within that. It started off as me getting into like faith and mental health stuff, but then realizing, oh, the same people who are struggling with mental health issues are getting maybe damage have gotten maybe damaging religious or faith me messages about mental health that also contributed and need new narratives and understandings. And so I really appreciate the work that you're doing. And so I think for starters, for those who are kind of just getting their bearings around this or haven't really heard it explained in a clear way, what is religious trauma? And what are some experiences or examples that you have encountered in your own work?
Sure,
And
sure.
just to also add on top of that, there are so many different, there are lots of, there's lots of words going around. So we're talking about religious trauma, which tends to be more like clinically connected, but there's also like religious shame and wounding, religious harm. So anyway, just in that context too, like if you could just share what all of that is.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of, like, kind of caveats. And so I view religious trauma, those two words, like, as an umbrella. Underneath it, I think an important part is the naming the, like, more clinical, like you were saying, Ranella, of it, religious trauma is not in the DSM, which is the big book of diagnosis and criteria and whatnot. And I'm not going to get into why that may or may not be helpful. But anyway, so religious trauma syndrome is the more clinical understanding. And I'm actually going to read a definition. This is from BEAM, Black Emotional and Mental Health Collective. So their understanding that's Religious trauma syndrome occurs when an individual struggles with leaving a religion or a set of beliefs. It often involves the trauma of breaking away from a controlling environment, lifestyle, or religious figure. In some settings, the symptoms of religious trauma can be similar to that of complex post-traumatic stress disorder. So that understanding is focusing more on like the impact and the aftermath of leaving a setting, an institution, an environment, right? I think the broader term of religious trauma that is more so the folks that I work with kind of relate to is less about, it does involve leaving, but I view it more around like deconstruction, which is another term I will put a pin in defining, but it's, hey, let's look at what happened. You know, what was I raised in, or what was I involved with? What was the church setting I was involved with? What was the specific institution that impacted me? Let's really process and look at what happened. Let's acknowledge what happened. Let's validate the feelings of what happened that maybe got bypassed, so that I can be a more whole person, so that I can integrate these parts of myself and decide for myself, what is the role of spirituality in my life? What is the role of religion in my life? Is that something I'm still wanting to participate in? But I view it as more so, yeah, religious trauma more so from the lens of like, okay, we have to pay attention. We have to acknowledge what happened. There's a definition that I've heard from a content creator and also psychologist, Dr. Becky. She's great on Instagram. And she describes trauma as something that happens too fast or with not enough information. That oftentimes trauma occurs because we don't talk about what happened. It wasn't explained. And so I think that can happen a lot when we are in religious settings, that it's just this, we're given information, we're given rules, we're given expectations without kind of understanding the why, which is really hard for our brains and bodies to connect with and also like respond to if we're not in that controlled setting.
When you think of someone who is traumatized, you know, even just physically or, you know, with something that happens, you think of more of like the aftermath of what has happened and how that's still affecting them now. And maybe some of the harm and wounding that has happened is a little bit less and a little bit more present. And, you know, because I've also heard, you know, spiritual abuse. And, you know, so when you think of abuse and trauma, these are stronger words. These are things that, you know, may have happened that had a connection to your relationship with God, like the implications were really high. And, you know, maybe there was an actual trauma that happened, you know, within a religious group. And so it is really interesting because I think there are different levels that people experience. Right. And, you know, for me, for example, I think I experienced a lot of religious wounding. And there were definite signs of trauma afterwards. But I know some people that have really experienced spiritual abuse. And, you know, that's when you get into like the cults and, you know, people who were even like physically and mentally suppressed.
Right.
So that's just a little bit more intense and ongoing and harsh. Whereas religious wounding and that shame and that harm can even be emotional. And the experiences I think that we have when we're kind of sitting there as the church member in the pew with someone from the front giving a strong, vigorous, and they are a person of power. And we forget that so often is like, they almost have more power than therapists and doctors and other people do. Like religious leaders have so much power. And so I think that's why there's harm, abuse, shaming, you know, wounding, all of that is because it's the position of power.
Exactly.
That you have to believe this way. You have to do these things. This is the interpretation you have to believe, or else. Mm-hmm. If your lifestyle and your choices don't add up in this way, then whew, and then the implications are huge. Like no life after death.
Right.
Like burn in hell forever. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. that's definitely caused for some wounding. Yeah.
When you say that, I think about the psychological trauma, right? Like, I think that's kind of what's coming to my mind is because, you know, so especially when some people don't understand, like, or bypass the effects of religious trauma by saying things like, okay, well, humans are messy, or, you know, people hurt you, but God didn't hurt you. And they kind of expect you to just kind of move along and like, okay, well, nobody maybe sexually abused you, right? Or maybe nobody physically abused you. I think that maybe they're missing the fact that psychological abuse is real when it comes to manipulation, gaslighting, disconnecting you from being able to trust yourself, manipulating your reality, you know, even manipulating your choices. And now it's led you down a path that isn't good for you and has real implications in your life, or you financially given in ways that have impacted you, right? Like all of these things, you might not have been physically abused, right? Or maybe you were, but like there really are levels to this because still that psychological manipulation and that psychological abuse that can take place sticks with you. You almost have to start over and relearn yourself and relearn your way of thinking. It really can lead to these existential crises. And I think when I hear all of this and things that I've experienced, you know, for me, it has kind of been more of that psychological side where it's like I had to readjust from harmful ideologies or things that were done or said.
Absolutely. And I'm remembering you had asked too around examples of like what I see in this. And so everything that the two of you are sharing is like exactly on point, and like it can be so frustrating to hear how continually minimized people's experiences are, right? Like that is adding to the wounding, that is adding to the hurt, that is adding to the trauma. And so I think I also want to, a fascinating thing that's going on is like, there's a modality, not modality. Yeah. A term a is totally theory. Thank you. with attachment styles, right? So it's like different attachment styles that we form are from our primary caregiver. There's a lot of information and research going on that actually there for those that grew up with religion, there is that attachment style is actually impacted by like God, like the attachment style that I had with God. Okay, so it sounds like, great, you two are already are aware of that. And like, so I think about that, right, of like, if there is a high control environment in that there isn't room for questioning, there isn't room for like my own personal experience, then my relationship, my attachment with God is going to be hurt in some ways, right? If like, I'm not allowed to understand God the way that I do. And so with the folks that I work with, like I do see a broad range of like kind of what you're saying of like the spectrum, right? I do unfortunately work with I love to work with them. However, there unfortunately are several cases of very real sexual trauma that happened and occurred that kind of was allowed because of the power dynamics that you're talking about, you know, like and the inherent trust that we as a society give religious figures, right? Of like, oh yeah, it's okay that you are hanging out with the pastor, right? Like, and not a lot of wherewithal or understanding. But then also I think about some folks who really do believe in God, but there is not room for them in the church because of how they identify, you know, whether in gender identity or sexual orientation. And then thinking about also hurt and wounding in terms of, you know, I'm thinking about an example around someone who was in a relationship with her boyfriend, and he was a pastor's kid, and there was a lot of power in the church. And when they broke up, she was, you know, scarlet lettered basically. And like, because of the breakup, had to leave the church. So yeah. What? So it's like, so it's like, okay, what's happening in these church environments that, you know, is allowing someone not to be included because of a breakup that had nothing to do with God, nothing to do with spirituality. So there's like a huge spectrum of like how interactions and relationships within the church, within spirituality, have impacted. And like, you know, and I think coming back to the understanding of religious trauma being similar to PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, I see a lot of like, there's so much anxiety. There's so much the inability to be able to trust ourselves. You know, all this time I was told that anxiety is of the devil, you know, so I just have to pray it away. So when I don't trust myself, that's the devil. And like, I'm not allowed to, right? Like, yeah, there's a lot more there, but
yeah, no, I appreciate everything that you're sharing. And I think, you know, there's just so many layers to it. Even with someone who, even within a context where someone was like even protecting known abusers, right? That happens so much. Because there is, and the world of religion and spirituality is just so weird in some ways, because there is no oversight.
There's no ethics.
No accountability. And I went to a Bible college where there was no accountability. And just to give a little snippet of a story that happened with some of the people that I knew, there were so many things that were happening within the realm of spiritual abuse. There was a lot of manipulation, control, things like that. And also kind of sexually related as well, that were happening. And the people that it was happening to, the students, would speak up and say something. But then those leaders, of course, like everything is at stake for them. And so they would kind of justify it, you know, kind of, you know, sweep it under the rug, all of that. They would not protect the student. And some of these people are people I know very well. And I was a golden child at that Bible college. So what was being fed to me was all of the things that I needed to believe about the teachers and professors and stuff there. And so even years after I left, a lot of this came to light. Some of my fellow students also put up on Facebook what happened, because there was like so little accountability that they were like, we don't know what to do. Yeah. So then they put on Facebook everything that happened. And that was the thing that made kind of the higher levels of, because that Bible college was under the a certain denomination. And so that denomination finally started, was like, okay, we need to have more accountability. But it was a Facebook post and people reposting and sharing and commenting. And it came out that there really was not any accountability. And so, but now you look at like the effects that that had on the students. I mean, even now, I think they were trying to, you know, take some of this to court, which I think they should. But like, even now, it's like, what is there? I know a lot of these people, and it's like the trauma that they've experienced. They have to go to therapy. They have to, you know, work through all of that. But that's just like one small little story. And there are so many more like that, and not at Bible colleges, but in churches where it's like, you know, there's even less of an expectation to have like oversight and accountability to pastors. So I don't know. I mean, I just think this happens so, so often. And I'm so grateful that it's starting to be more recognized and validated, because whether we like it or not, I still believe that a lot of the victims of this are women, and that you know, especially women they're not taken seriously in the Christian world. You know, that's kind of what patriarchy kind of sets you up to do. Anyway.
Preach, Vanilla. Like,
It's interesting, right? Because a lot of people are seeing this move of deconstruction online, right? Or this move of people kind of like calling things out online. And I think a lot of people are worried about the church's image, right? Even in hearing conversations like this, there is an idea of don't talk bad about it, keep the unity and all of that. And I would argue that, like, I love the people in church so much. And that's why I think it's so important to protect people, like in the church, like in the body, you know? And I think what's happening too with social media is, especially with our generation, because we are growing up with social media. The other generations, like our parents' generation, they didn't have social media. So these things were happening, but they weren't being voiced in a way that was amplified like it is now. So I think a lot of people are shaken because they're like, I don't get like this uprising of all these voices against these issues. And it's like, no, I think that like there were always instances of these things types of things happening. But our generation is, we're not teenagers anymore. We're not in our, you know, early 20s anymore. We've now gotten to the age where we're thinking about our experiences and we're looking back and we are piecing it together. And that is coming out online as we are growing and looking back and learning as well. And I think that's what we're seeing happening. We're seeing this public conversation happening of our experiences now that we're older and can put language and understanding to it. And I think people are worried about that, but I just think that, I think that's what's happening is like the young kids and the youth group are in these situations or in the Bible college, like Grinnella was talking about, have grown up now and now are putting language to their experiences. And now we have social media with us and that's all coinciding.
Absolutely. Well, and it is in direct correlation to what we were just talking about with power dynamics, right? Like, why is the church so scared of how it's being presented? It's because there now is a power shift happening with social media. Exactly what you're saying, Brittany, right? Of like, yes, now people have voices, they have platforms, they have the ability to show the receipts, to really like put it out there, put that information out there. And information is power. And so, you know, we're seeing the kind of shift and people shaking in their boots and like, what happens, right? But it's like, this is the checks and balances that we're talking about. This is the accountability. And I believe a church structure that is biblical is one that is one of accountability, one of like community, making sure that all people in the church have a role, right? Like, so it just, it's a disservice. I don't often have a lot of sympathy for abusers, obviously. But I have minor sympathy in terms of nobody should have all this power. Like if you have unchecked power, that also isn't biblical.
Healthy for you.
Like, yeah, exactly. And that isn't healthy. Yeah.
And I appreciate you giving an alternative too of what the alternative could look like.
And you were talking about power dynamics and it's just so interesting how, when we're talking about religious trauma and you're talking about that relationship to our sexuality and we're talking about, you know, women's empowerment and how all of that really connects, because whether the church likes it or not, they are always a reflection of society and vice versa, especially in the Western world. We're very, you know, and the world in general, even in the Eastern world, they're affected by their Eastern religions. We're affected by our Western religion of Christianity. And, you know, the amount of respect, equality, and care that are shown to women in the world, you know, the church is always a little bit behind that. And so, you know, when we talk about empowering people and everyone has voices now, you know, it's, yes, it's both men and women, but I promise you when women are empowered, when they start speaking out, when they actually start using their voices, I think that's when the whole world shakes in their boots.
Yeah.
Because women have been the ones who, you know, quote unquote, are the weaker, you know, biblically the weaker vessel, or even just in life, like we're just weaker physically. So there's a lot of, you know, there's just so much, there's just an idea about women that can be taken advantage of. And I think male leaders in the church are really scared, and male leaders in the non-church areas are also really scared and want to frame women in a certain way. And I mean, I have a women's group that I run, and this is just why I feel so strongly about empowering women, because when you take women, it's like they're part of other minority groups, you know, like those in, you know, Black and brown communities, immigrant communities. Like when you strengthen the weakest, quote unquote, the weakest, that's true equality. And that's when the people in power tend to shake in their boots. But that's the most important. And ironically, they are the ones that end up in this crazy cycle that end up being looked down on as, you know, oh, you're becoming a Jezebel now. Oh, you're becoming empowered. You're just a sexual creature that wants to make people look at you. You're selfish. You're self-centered. So there's just so many things that you try to get out of the cycle. And it's very difficult as a woman to get out, men included as well. But for women, you know, I'll end my rant here soon, but like, you never look at a man walking into church and see his new shoes and think, oh, he's trying to tempt people, or he drives in with a new car. Like, oh, what a sexual, you know, like nothing. A woman walks in, she can almost do anything. And there's something connected to how she's trying to make someone stumble. So anyway, all of that to say, like the work that I feel like we're doing is, especially if you are a woman listening to this and you've felt shame and you felt in a corner, like this is for you. Like step into your power. It's okay to heal. It's okay to like ask questions and to doubt and to validate your experiences.
Let's all take an empowered breath after that.
Deep breath.
Yeah, sigh of grief.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Renelle. That's all very felt. I'm all for changing the narratives that have been handed down for us. And I cannot tell you how much therapy I've done about all the double binds that we find ourselves in as women. That being said, right, you know, dealing with all of these narratives that we've gotten that might be toxic or that might be manipulative or that might be abusive. You come out of that situation, right? Maybe you've been in a high control, you know, faith community, and you're realizing something's not right here and you're trying to step away. A lot of times, like I said, this is where people find themselves in faith crisis because their worldview is, you know, intermingled with that community. You know, a lot of their worldview has been shaped by that community. So I guess, how does religious trauma or coming out of these situations play a role in someone rethinking their beliefs now? Now maybe they're rethinking everything that was said to them.
Yeah. I mean, I think you summed it up well in that last bit of rethinking everything. And that is often where I find folks. Like, that's the beginning ground, I think, is what can I believe? What is true? I wasn't necessarily taught how to understand truth in my body. I talk a lot about body because, and I think this connects also with what I view as sex therapy. Sex therapy is a very broad term for me because when I talk about sex, I'm talking about body, I'm talking about pleasure, I'm talking about desire. And those three words feel like, when I say them to you, they feel like sin, right? Like when we're talking about, we were taught flesh is bad. And so I like that right there, starting with the body, is a massive undertaking of relearning and unlearning and taking away what I was told about who I am, right? How can I be told that I am made in the image of God, but then I am also the temptress. I am the person who's causing men to stumble. You know, these men that are grown men, mind you, and have a completely, you know, developed brain. Hello. So in working with folks and kind of in that beginning process of like, where do we start? How do I start to take ownership and find my own voice, right? I like to, what it sounds like in therapy with me, what I do is, you know, I am going to pause someone of like, oh, did you notice that your voice shifted a little bit? When you were saying this thing over here, you actually sounded really sturdy. And it sounded like actually your belief, it sounded like that's what you felt, versus when you were describing a situation where someone did something to you, or that was something that you had perceived, that didn't really sound like you, like how I'm understanding you. And so can we start to create more awareness, more noticing of what it feels like to say things that feel more true to myself? And then wow. Also, I think I there's a lot like embodiment. Thank you. The embodiment, like the way I describe embodiment is emotions don't only happen in our head, they happen in our bodies. Right. They actually happen in our bodies first. And so again, like in therapy spaces, that's going to look like pausing someone while we're talking and, okay, so wait, what's happening? Like did you notice that your knees are like shaking up and down? You actually seem kind of anxious. Like, did you notice that what was happening? And unfortunately, like 9 times out of 10, like when I'm starting to work with people coming from religious trauma, they do not have any awareness below their neck, like literally do not have a connection with their body. And that is so limiting. Like if we do not know what is happening in our bodies, if we are not able to like recognize and pause and like, oh, I'm feeling some tightness in my chest. Can I help myself out? Can I do something to like help myself? But the trauma response often is, I just have to be urgent. I have to keep going. It's actually harmful if I listen to my body, because I was taught not to trust my body.
I really love everything that you just shared, because this is a skill,
yes,
right? It's a skill and an awareness that we are not taught in general, in church, in school, in our families, in society. It's new to us in the Western world. I say that being Indian, coming from an Eastern background, it's new to us in the Western world as far as what's accepted. And I'm so glad it's seeping into our church culture as well. Mindfulness is becoming more accepted. Because when I learned that skill and continue, I mean, I'm still learning that skill, but when I was introduced to it, and that is actually what changed everything. So, you know, I even was going to like traditional talk therapy before, and this integrating this is the thing that grounds me every day. But I think it's so interesting, because once you have that skill, it's also the embodied within that skill is the willingness to listen. And to accept, because the acceptance of what you might find, the implications of it, again, are so huge. And so when we're talking about shifting and changing beliefs, I mean, my beliefs have changed so much in the last 5 to 7 years. And when it was first shifting, there was a block that would not allow me to accept the shifting. And I think that's normal. You know, so even if you're in that place where there's a block, you kind of know a little bit of what you might be trending toward, but you're afraid. That's very normal. But the more you allow yourself to listen to the wisdom of your body, I mean, I think that's where happiness is. I think that's where peace is. That's where wisdom is.
I think that's where God is.
It's our inner wisdom. The kingdom of God is within you. And of course, for people, they're like, don't say that. And it's like, well, that comes from such a deep distrust in the self. And, if you start trusting in yourself, now you're a Buddhist all of a sudden. And it's like, well, maybe we're all just humans and we can learn from each other and we can all learn from each other's wisdom. So the shifting beliefs can be very difficult as you start. But I do think that that is a really safe practice, a safe practice of listening to what's inside, because you might find that. Your heart rate starts going up. You start getting anxious when you think about that certain belief or that person who,
And quickly, I want to add to that. I think exactly what you're saying of the difficulty with acceptance. And I like to also tell folks, like when we're starting out, we're living in the land of awareness for a while. We're just going to start being aware. Like it takes a lot of work to do that. Going into acceptance, oof, honey, that may be years down the road, right? Like, which is hard to hear, I understand. But in that, part of the acceptance is accepting discomfort and sitting with discomfort, because I think another term that we're understanding more is spiritual bypassing, which feels related to toxic positivity, right? Of if I feel badly, bad is typically the connotation was sin or the devil or shame, what have you, right? And that's not of God. But actually, our whole human experience, the wide spectrum, the more you can get connected with grief, with sadness, with feeling the depths of that, the more you're able to experience joy, the right. more you're able to experience this range, right? And so absolutely kind of just wanted to comment on that, of like that acceptance piece being so big that yeah. when we accept that we can experience this both and in our bodies,
yes.
that is going to be one of the biggest like tools for change.
And the unknown mm-hmm. is also okay. Like
Ooh,
accepting yeah. the uncertainty of where you might be going, or accepting yeah. that you don't know. And mm-hmm. when people ask you where you stand, it's all right to be like, I don't know. Still figuring it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the ways in which I was gaslit about the messages that my body was saying to me.
Yeah.
You know I was in situations where I felt like something was off. I felt like something was wrong. I did feel like they were, you know, overstepping boundaries, trying to control, manipulating, all of that. But it was gaslit by the leadership that it's rebellion, right? Like what mm-hmm. you're feeling is actually rebellion, or what you're feeling is the pull into sin. What you're feeling is the pull into flesh, into your flesh. So even your own feelings about your body are kind of being mixed up because someone is interpreting that mm-hmm. experience for you, when really mm-hmm. what you're feeling is an intuition that I actually think is from God that is telling yeah. you something's not right here. And so mm-hmm. I just wanted to highlight that too, that mm-hmm. sometimes that gaslighting can take place of someone mm-hmm. else trying to interpret it. And especially if you're not used to being in touch with your own body and understanding what the messages of your body are telling you, that can mm-hmm. be really confusing. If someone else is, you might think, oh,
yeah.
maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's my human flesh. Maybe it's my sin that's leading mm-hmm. me toward this, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, and I look back, I was like, no, that was my body warning me that I did not feel safe in yeah. this situation, that what they were saying was not adding up. And I look back mm-hmm. and that was true. That was true, mm-hmm. you know? And this is the spiritual gaslighting, which is a whole other term, right? When someone's using spiritual language to invalidate or manipulate your reality, your experience, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. right? And these are things that you have to undo. You know, I posted on Instagram some weeks ago, one of the biggest things I had to unlearn in my faith journey is that I can't trust myself. Mm-hmm. and that my body is not my own, this constant disconnection from my body. And, you know, the idea that my body either belongs to my future husband or God, but it never belongs to me.
Yeah.
Right. And so I had so many women comment from that, you know, mm-hmm. and I realize how that does specifically affect women in very unique ways because of the specific messaging we get about our bodies.
Yes.
And I had to relearn just to freaking trust myself. And I know that can sound blasphemous in some ways in the world that I come from, that you don't put the trust on self, you put it on God. But if God is in me, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the Holy Spirit is in me, then what this is a double message, right? This is, you're saying God is in me, but also God is not in me. Which one mm-hmm. is it? Right.
Yeah.
And that's confusing. Yeah. So there's confusing mixed messaging. No wonder we're not connected to our bodies. No wonder we're not connected to ourselves, because we've gotten all these mixed messages. And I think it's really important
right.
to have that embodiment piece, especially for women.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, absolutely. And like, I feel like I can't not comment on also a lot of what you're naming feels connected to purity culture, which is more of an evangelical Christian understanding, right? But it was a movement that started in the late 90s. It was the, you know, true love waits, that all of that, right? And so in that, and with purity culture, and this is like one of the biggest things that I work with, because I do tend to work with primarily females and women, right? And like, So it's understanding what those narratives, you know, said to me about my body, that I wasn't allowed to trust myself. Exactly. I wasn't, my body is not my own. And similarly, I did something of asking people on social media, you know, like, what were you told? What was the metaphor for like purity or saving yourself or what have you? The things that people were told when they are a developing little girl, right? Like yeah. that our bodies were being compared to chewed gum, right? Like if you had sex, it's like chewing gum. And then you spit out the gum and then you're wasted, right? Or crumpled Oof. Rose. Someone told that the oh, pastor yes. sent around a rose one. And everybody mm-hmm. took a petal off, right? And then, the thing of like trying to squeeze out mayo and then trying to put it back inside. That like the act of thinking about sex, which is a mm-hmm. very normal thing. Your brain literally yes. can't stop. That is a very human understanding. I'm also gonna like bodies and sex and pleasure is so innate. And again, yeah. thinking about how are we really talking about this? If like, again, we're saying God made you exactly the way that you're supposed to be. And then this very developmentally normal thing that is happening of, oh, I'm noticing some changes in my body when I'm, in eighth grade and I see my crush and my heart is fluttering and, oh no, I'm lusting. What? Like, that is crazy. Like, that is so harmful. So it just feels important of like naming the impact, of purity culture there too, of like continuing the disconnection between very normal developmental processes and like how we have to regain that and relearn it as adults, which
wow
makes people feel very isolated. There's a lot of like that feeling of isolation, feeling like I'm taking a long time with dating. I hear that a lot with people of like, oh, I'm having to catch up. I don't have any experience, which is it's hard, right? There's a lot of anger and grief there that I missed out on a lot of normal age-appropriate opportunities to date, to explore, to feel confident and comfortable in my body.
I'm so glad that you brought that up because that's mm-hmm. just so integrated into all of the messages that we've been given. And actually, in one of our future episodes from this month, we're going to be talking to, I don't know if you follow Stephanie Stalvey, on Instagram. I will send you her Instagram, but she's an artist and she actually draws like all of these crazy, incredible comics about her experience mm-hmm. in purity culture. So you will actually love her stuff. But yeah, that's so connected. Just in our last little bit here, mm-hmm. one of the questions that we had here that I'm really curious to hear your experience or and your thoughts on is, what would you say to someone who maybe feels the need to step away mm-hmm. from their community, their church, after religious trauma, but maybe, you know, is experiencing some shame? I mean, I've been there too,
stepping away and experiencing shame. Yes, that is unfortunately very normal. We have to validate that we are human beings. We are wired for relationship. So it is so hard for us to make the courageous, brave effort to step away from a community where we did experience a lot of belonging. We experienced those feelings of being part of a group, which is a very safe place. Our brains mm-hmm. recognize that as a very safe thing. Don't leave the group, right? And so in taking the steps to step away, I would just say the fact that you are getting to this place where you are recognizing that this is a need for you. Again, I'm going to connect that with the power of desire. Like you're desiring something else. Something is not right. I have to think that it took you a while to get here. This was not an impulsive decision. So let's honor that. Let's honor that. And again, this like the beginning part of beginning to trust your own body and what you need, you're allowed to do that. And like the ripple effect is going to be so amazing. And also we can validate and normalize, you're allowed to go back if that's what you deem appropriate, right? But I think I also want to normalize the term deconstruction. It's a like kind of pop psychology word of, oh, kids these days are deconstructing, right? What did Martin Luther do when he nailed the 95 theses, right, to the wall? Like, that was him deconstructing. So it is actually a very healthy and normal thing. We all are evolving in our faith. Our faith is supposed to be different than our parents. Like, if you looked at your parents' faith, I'm sure it has shifted from their parents, right? Like, because we are constantly seeking. The hope is that we're seeking God and we're finding that. So stepping away is normal. Give yourself that break. Give yourself that allowance, permission, and try something different, because it's okay to go back.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because what you find for people who do need to step away, because I do believe sometimes you can't heal in the same environment that's making you sick, right? That whole idea. And you need to actually get into a safer environment, whether it's with a group or with a therapist like yourself or something, to process everything that's happening and do that healing work. And I do believe that in some of these very high control environments, there is an infantilization that's taking place, meaning that they are keeping you in this simple black and white childlike state of mind where you don't get to develop and gain some of these skills like resilience, like, you know, complex nuanced thinking, the skills that you would typically develop if there wasn't so much control and manipulation, right? And so sometimes people can take the space and redevelop those skills to take with them into a lifetime, skills that we understand from a psychological perspective are really important for your development and your livelihood and your well-being. And that's really important. And I think coming around really quickly back to what you said, on the flip side, what would you say to someone who wants to rejoin their faith community or start stepping back into church? They've been out for a while. They want to go back. They miss it. But they also feel very skeptical because of the hurt and harm that's happened to them. Any word of encouragement for them? Or even, I know earlier you were mentioning maybe some characteristics of a healthier environment to look out for. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I think in stepping away, like, and processing, giving yourself some space, giving yourself that time that you're saying, Brittany, of like being able to grow up a little bit, right? Grow up outside of this. That is so good. That's so necessary. So take those skills that, like, take that awareness. Hopefully there's a little bit a stronger connection, relationship with your body, and use that. Again, get to trust that when you are seeking out different, you know, churches or spiritual groups or whatnot or practices, like, try to embrace the openness, the mind, the being aware of, like, how did I feel in this space? How, you know, what's something that I would want to be a little different? Can I get that need met? Right? Because recognizing churches are, you know, going to be an imperfect place, right? And so you're not going to find one that checks every single one of your boxes. But being, I think, kind of focusing on, like, what is my motivation for joining this space? So am I looking for relationships? Great. How am I getting connected? Are there people that I can trust here? Am I looking for leadership, authority, guidance, you know, like, okay, how did I vibe with the pastor? Did I like what they were saying? Am I looking for worship? Great. Okay. You know, or do I want to go to a concert? Great. Okay. Like, I think just trusting yourself and allowing yourself to move slowly. That is my biggest encouragement for folks, is moving slowly. I think there's a lot, again, coming back to some of the trauma response and the feeling of, like, we have to respond with urgency. Anytime we can move slowly, that is a way that you are understanding and making space for yourself, your body, your relationship with God. We don't have to move fast. You don't have to please, you don't have to become a church member. You don't have to sign up to volunteer day one, right? We are moving slowly.
I needed that message because I'm the one that will sign up on day one.
No, that is so good though. I mean, I think, yeah, this definitely moving slowly, and because it's really weird going back to an environment that maybe you've left or you've distanced yourself from. There's almost this knee-jerk reaction of like, oh, let's make everything like it was again. And I think that's just kind of the message for any and all emerging adults, full-blown adults, you know, middle-aged adults, whatever, you know, just like that's something that we have to accept about being a human that is in this world for the, you know, rest of our lives, is that we're constantly redefining our contexts. And we're constantly redefining everything around us, because as humans, we always want things to just stay like the same. So we want our families and our relationships and our community and everything to stay the same. And it's like, no, actually, I love how you said, like, our faith is supposed to be different from our parents. Like your relationship, you know, even the things like for my dad, for example, I remember like every time he hit a decade marker, he was like, okay, now it's time for me to do something different with my physical fitness in order to stick with my like slowing metabolism. So he would change something. He would finish his meals at, you know, 3 instead of 5, or he would start exercising or whatever he was doing, or he would cut something. But every decade, he was always doing something different to keep up with just the fact that you change. And I think in the same way, like spiritually, even friendships, we've talked about friendships last month, like so many different areas do shift and change. And this is definitely one of those areas that should change, not just between your family, you know, your parents and you, but even in your own experience. So as you were talking, like the recurring thought in my mind was like how important it is to stay open, flexible, and curious about our futures. Instead of just stuck and, you know, stagnant and afraid of it changing. It's like, that's a given. It's going to change. You're not going to be who you imagined yourself to be, but there's so much safety there too. There's a lot of safety as long as you are connected to you. So that's kind of the message that I feel like I've gotten from what we've talked about today is just like, stay curious about the future, let it go. Allow your body's wisdom and God, if you believe in God, to lead and guide you into like your very unknown future, but is full of promise if you stay connected to yourself.
Yes, thank you guys so much, Caitlin. Thank you so much for sharing all this with us. How can those who are listening stay connected to you and some of the work that you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Instagram account that I have that is more therapy based, which is really, I post whenever I'm inspired. It's a very inconsistent.
I love that.
Yes, which I love. So that's at Caitlin, C-A-I-T-L-I-N, period, Harrison, period, therapy, at Caitlin Harrison Therapy. And then the, you know, group practice that I work for is at Kindman, KINDMAN.co on Instagram. And I guess we also have TikToks for both of those accounts, the Caitlin Harrison Therapy and Kindman and Co, but those aren't very, I'm more of an elder millennial, so I'm more on Instagram.
Same.
Yeah.
Well, we will have all of that in the show notes. So thank you guys so much for tuning in and joining us for another very nuanced conversation. Until next time. Hey, if you enjoyed today's episode, let's continue the conversation and stay connected on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, all linked in the show notes below. Let us know your thoughts or leave a review on the podcast. Your feedback really does mean so much to us. Until next time.